You know, it is said that the minhag of Chabad, of Lubavitch, is that the last paragraph that you have in the Seder, Chasal Seder Pesach, this is the end of the Seder of Pesach, is not said, because the theory is that the hashpah that one gets from the Seder never ends, that indeed stays with a person their entire lives, and therefore you never finish. So in light of that, although I'm not a Lubavitcher per se, but in light of that, I do want to share with you a thought about a part of Pesach that we often don't get to before Pesach, because it concerns the end of Pesach. And that's some aspects of Kriyas Yamsuf, I don't think we had talked about before. And that is, we know that Pesach is very different than Sukkot. Sukkot, every single day you say a complete hallel. The entire hallel is recited. When it comes to Pesach, you only recite the complete Hallel on the first day, or Chutz La'aretz, the first 2 days, and Eretz Yisrael, 1 day. The rest of Pesach, we only say a truncated, a partial Hallel. And there are really two reasons for this. Most people know the reason I'm going to talk about, but the Gemara gives a reason. The Gemara gives a reason why Sukkot is different than Pesach. And it gives it based on a technical reason. We know that every day in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a Korban Musaf that is brought. On Sukkot, each day of Sukkot had a special and different Korban Musaf. Those were the famous bowls of Sukkot, the Parim of Sukkot that go down in number, meaning the first day is 13, etc. And it adds up to 70. And the concept is because on Sukkot we bring Korbanos because of the 70 nations of the world. But however we understand that, since every single day has a different Musaf than the day before, we perceive of every single day as a different Yom Tov, even Chol HaMoed. Pesach also had a Musaf that was brought every day. This is not the Korban Pesach, I'm talking about the Korban Musaf that was brought. But the Musaf of every day of Pesach is the same. It's the same Korban. Two Parim, two bulls, one isle, one ram, and seven sheep. That was brought every single day. And hence, since every day is the same as the day before, we do not make it a different Hallel, and there's only the first day would have Hallel, complete Hallel, because only the first day is the beginning of a new Yom Tov, and it's not a different Yom Tov as you go through it. That's the reason the Gemara gives. In other words, Sukkot, every day is a special Korban. Pesach, every day is the same Korban, so really there's only 1 day of Yom Tov. That's the first day. All the other days are simply days of the same Yom Tov. Even Shvi Shel Pesach, you'll remember, we don't say Shechianu because it's really just the same Yom Tov. But there's another reason that the Medrash gives, and I'm sure all of you have heard this reason, and that is that we don't say a complete Hallel because on the seventh day of Pesach the Egyptians died in the Yom Tov, and Chazal tell us that the Malachi Hashareis wanted to say Shira to Hashem. They wanted to sing a praise to Hashem. And Hashem answered, Maise Yadai Tavu Bayam, the creatures of my hands, the Egyptians, are drowning in the ocean. V'atem Omrim Shira, and you want to sing praise, and you want to rejoice and be happy when human beings are dying, even if they're Egyptians. There is no joy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when even the Rishonim die. And therefore, we don't say a complete Hallel. Well, now, so Chazal say in the Gemara, that's why the Malachim couldn't say Shir. The Medrash says, extends it one step further, that is why we do not say a complete Hallel, to show that our joy is diminished because of the destruction of the Egyptians. So
then how is it right that we celebrate
That's a good question, but obviously the Nes of Purim, the main thing that we're celebrating on Purim is not so much the loss of life, it's the fact that Haman's Gezerah, the day that Haman's Gezerah should have been that we're destroyed, we were saved. I mean, the fact that 75,000 people died is not, even in the Megillah Mamish, that's not indicated as the big cause of celebration. But the seventh day of Pesach, which is miyuchad to the downfall of the Egyptians by the splitting of the Red Sea, that we don't celebrate. Seventh and eighth are the same Yom Tov.
Is there anything you're getting on Purim that we do to show our mourning?
On one level, we don't say Hallel at all on Purim. Now, granted, the reason is not given for that, but it might be, that might be another expression of it. Now the Taz just asked the Kasha, so how come, one second, so I understand why we don't say a full Hallel on the 7th and 8th day of Pesach, because that's when the Kriyas Yamsuf occurred, but why don't we say a full Hallel on Chol HaMoed after all? Sukkos we say a full Hallel on Chol HaMoed, so the Taz gives a reason that we never want to make Chol HaMoed more significant than Yom Tov itself. So if you're not going to say a whole Hallel on the Yom Tov, then you move backwards and you don't say the whole Hallel on Chol HaMoed.
But it was very appropriate for the Bnei Strom, who the Nace was trying to get to sing a lot of Shiva.
So that's going to be the question. Yeah, I'll get to that. Right. Because obviously there's a whole problem there. Because Bnei Yisrael did say Shiva, and therefore how come we can't say the whole Hallel? Right? But you know, it's the same reason the Rishonim give why we pour out some of our wine during the 10 Makos. Because once again, when we discuss the Egyptian suffering, there's Maisa Yadai Tavu B'Yam, where they're drowning or being afflicted, we don't say a complete Shira. Again, it's an amazing idea. I mean, when you talk about how nations of the world often rejoice when they defeat their enemies and destroy their enemies and they make big parties, and we actually feel sadness, even for the Rishayim that have to be destroyed. Like Bruria told Rav Meir, then Bruria was Rav Meir's wife, and when Rav Meir wanted to pray that Rishayim should die, Bruria told him, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz, the sins should disappear from the world, for lo chaitim, we don't pray for the chaitim to disappear from the world. We don't do that. Now, the question I want to raise is the following. L'chaira, the inyan of Maisei Yadai Tavu Bayom, the empathy for the destruction of human life, L'chaira, the first day of Pesach, something also happened. There was Makas Becharos. And there were 10 plagues in which Egyptians died and were afflicted. And yet, we do say a complete Hallel on the first day of Pesach, first 2 days of Pesach. Why don't we have a concern on the first day of Pesach? Maisa Yadai Tavu B'Yam. That's one question to consider. A second question to consider is this. It says by Kriyas Yamsuf, and we say this every day in Davening, Vayar Yisrael es Yad HaGadola. Bnei Yisrael saw the Yad HaGadola, the great hand, Asher Asa Hashem B'Mitzrayim, that Hashem did to the Egyptians, Vayiru Ha'ames Hashem, and they feared Hashem, Vayaminu B'Hashem, and they believed in Hashem, Uva Moshe Avdo, and in Moshe his servants. And the Medrash says that Kriyas Yamsuf brought the Jewish people to a new level of Yiras Hashem, fear of Hashem, meaning respect, awe, and a new level of emunah in Hashem. The question is, what is the chiddush in Kriyas Yamsuf? They saw the Makos, they saw the Nisan and the flows. What did Kriyas Yamsuf add in Yiras Hashem and emunah Hashem? Right. So the two questions we want to discuss are, number one, why is Maaseh Yadai Tavu B'Yam only a concern on the seventh day of Pesach? Why wasn't it a concern on the first day of Pesach? And number two, what is the chiddush of emunah in Kriyas Yamsuf? That, in other words, what did they see from Kriyas Yamsuf that they didn't already know when they left Mitzrayim? Now, Lagavi, the first question, why isn't there a Maaseh Yadai concern for the first day of Pesach? We can actually give a simple answer. This is exactly along the lines of what you said. Hashem condemned the angels from saying Shira by saying, you don't praise me right now. And yet we find that Bnei Yisrael themselves were singing songs to Hashem, as Yashir, right? We don't find Hashem said to them, don't sing to me. And the answer is, Pashut, many Mephorshim say, that there's a chiluk between the person that is directly benefited. When Hashem does a great tova for you, even though there is human life that is destroyed, you are mechriyev in terms of hakaras hatov to express your gratitude to the Ribono Shalom. The only thing is, Hashem condemned the angels because the angels were not benefiting from it. The angels are just seeing Hashem doing a wonderful thing. So Hashem tells the Malachim, don't praise me for what involves destruction of life. But you who benefit directly, you're mechuyev to praise me. In the Mele, I think the Sfas Emes says, the first day of Pesach Chayav Adam Liros Esatzmo Ki Ilu Hu Yatzam in Mitzrayim. The first day of Pesach, I have to feel as if I myself am being redeemed. So I'm in the same position as the Jews that were redeemed. And those who are directly redeemed, you say a complete shira. We don't say Maisi Yadai Tavu B'yam. The only thing is, Kriyas Yamsuf, there is no such chiyuv that I'm a chiyuv to feel as if I myself was personally taken out of the Yamsuf. I now become like the Malachim. I'm the third person praising Hashem. So when it comes to a third person praising Hashem, and that we say, Maisi Yadai Tavu B'yam Batem Omim Shiras, right? So that's why there's a chiluk, meaning to say that all of us on the first day of Pesach are equivalent to the Jews who were actually saved. But on the seventh day of Pesach, we are like the angels who were not directly saved. And since the angels are not directly saved, and we're not directly saved by Kriyas Yamsuf, so therefore there is a taina that we don't say Shira because of Maisa Yadai Tavu B'yam.
But we would have to say something by the mission down. Because if they had not down, they would have gotten over and destroyed us.
Right. Yes, that's true. That's true. But that's not being directly saved. Meaning we have benefited. In other words, we don't have to. We don't imagine as if we were in the Yamsuf. We have benefited from an earlier generation being saved. But that is not the same as experiencing that Geula yourself. But that still does, and then we still have to address the second question, though, which is the more complicated question, and that is, what is the chiddush of Emuna and Yira that Kriyas Yamsuf added?
But chronologically,
weren't
the Mishnah saved on the seventh day?
No, yes.
So, but you're saying we don't say Shira for that, as if we were there?
No, that's what I'm saying. Because on the first day, we were taken out of Mitzrayim.
Right.
So that we have to regard as if it happened to us.
Right.
That's why I say a complete Shira on the first day of Pesach, complete Hallel, even though Egyptians died in Makas Bechoros. Because in other words, I, Legabe, leaving Mitzrayim, is in a similar position to the Jews who were taken out of the Red Sea. In other words, just like the Jews who were taken out of the Red Sea, they said a complete Shira that day.
Okay. Because we regard ourselves in the same way.
Yeah, it's not the same redemption. All I'm saying is that the concept is, whenever it pertains to a personal redemption that you're experiencing, you say a complete shira, even if human life was destroyed. Yeah.
Sure. Because you don't have the obligation of Chayav Adam
in Kriyas Yamsuf. Yeah. Then that's what the Sfasema says, that the chiyuv of looking at yourself as if you're taken out only applies to the first day. It does not apply to the seventh day. But on a deeper level, this idea, which will also answer the first question as well, of what is the chiddush of Emuna and Yira that Kriyas Yamsuf is mechadesh. So the Beis Halevi, in his Perush al HaTorah, actually answers this question in two different places. One in Parshas Bereishis, and the other is in Parshas Bishalach. And he offers two different answers, although they interrelate. The first answer that he gives is the following. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to the world, Hashem made the world, but Hashem's relationship to the world is very different than the relationship, let's say, a carpenter has to a table. Now you could say, Hashem makes the world, a carpenter makes a table. What's the difference? The difference is that once a carpenter makes a table, the existence of the table is independent from that of the carpenter. Now granted, the carpenter might have the power to destroy the table. Of course, other people could have that power as well. But even if the carpenter dies or is gone, the table continues to exist. The continued existence of the table does not depend on the active will and benevolence of the carpenter. Meaning to say, the created object, if we even use the word created, because it's not Yesh Me'ayin, but the created object has an existence that is independent of the will of its creator. That is how human, and that's why you can have things, right, that can exist thousands of years, right, the pyramids, after the death of the people who made them. With the world, it's very, very different. It's not the pshat that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Rather, every single second and moment in time, the world exists only because it is actively the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us life, to give us chesed, to give us an ability to breathe. It's not the pshat even Hashem could destroy the world. It's not the pshat, oh, Hashem is all-powerful because he could destroy the world. It's more than that. Actively, Hashem is creating every second. That's the concept of HaMechadesh B'tshuva, we say in davening, B'chol Yom Tamid. Hashem is recreating the world every single second. There's a tremendous mussar in that. The mussar in that is that we are recreated every second, meaning to say no matter what our past is, every single second there's a new opportunity for tshuva. Because if the pshat would be, I would be created, and then I continue just to be the same, then you might say tshuva becomes impossible. How can I change who I am? But every second I'm created anew. What I am is not what I was a second ago. Or at least I could, through my bechira, I could make myself a new person, because Hashem makes me a new person every second. The Talmud Devarah, Rav Moshe Cordovero, one of the great Kabbalists, he was the a little bit older than the Arizal in Sfat. Rav Moshe Cordovero writes, this is the meaning of the Mida. We talked about this with the Yud Gimel Midos of Rachamim. Mikel Kamocha. Who is like Hashem? Because like this, let's assume somebody insults me and spits at me and slaps me and hits me. So if I'm a tzaddik, I will control my temper and not lash out. But how many of us will be able, at the very moment that someone is spitting at you, not only to hold yourself in and not get angry, but to actively give that person chesed at the very moment that they're insulting you? Now look at Hashem. The chayte that is rebelling against the Ribono Shel Olam, at the very moment of his chayte, Hashem is giving him life. Hashem is giving him the life to spit in Hashem's face. That's Mikel Kamocha. That's a Meshunetika level of patience and love and care, which really does not have that much of a human parallel. Because human beings are capable of controlling ourselves. A human being is capable of not responding in kind, right? Not taking revenge, lo sita velo sita. But could we mamish give the person chesed at the time? Sometimes it happens with parents and children. You can imagine a situation maybe where a child is having a temper tantrum and saying, I hate you, and this and that. And the mother, you know, is hugging the child. One could imagine it. But we tell ourselves that because it's only a kid, you know, it'll grow out of it. And, you know, we tell ourselves those things. But it would be very, very hard to relate that way to your 35-year-old, you know, who's behaving that way at that moment. Very, very difficult. And it's not just Hashem doing chesed. Hashem is giving him the life and giving him the opportunity. So this is the concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's connection to the world is not merely that he made the world and he can intervene and control it, but every single second, our chayim, and our chias comes from the loving kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Well, wouldn't that be hypocritical if somebody would do that? We're not supposed to be hypocritical.
Well, hypocritical because you wouldn't feel that way inside.
Yeah, you're going against what you're supposed to. I mean, you're supposed to insult you, you're not supposed to.
Well, first of all, the thing is this. The thing is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not hypocritical because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to do it, he wouldn't do it. Rather, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, it all depends. I mean, for example, sometimes hypocrisy is a good thing. For example, if we're supposed to control our anger, if we're supposed to not take revenge, if we're supposed to not bear a grudge. Now, often in our feelings, there's going to be anger and there's going to be resentment. But part of the Torah's message is we try to train ourselves not to show that way. And the idea is that even if initially we don't have those good feelings, but if we try to behave that way consistently, eventually we develop into a different person. Meaning, this is the Sefer HaChinuch's teaching, Adam Nifal Kafi Pu'ulosav. Meaning, instead of saying my actions reflect my feelings, there is a concept of my feelings get redefined by the actions that I take. Now that's not hypocrisy, because you're not doing it to fool people. You're not doing it to give people a good impression. You're doing it because, as an Eved Hashem, an Avedis Hashem, you want to commit yourself to becoming a better person. So that's not hypocrisy. That's ishtadlus in spiritual aliyah. Now, if you're asking me practically, when you have anger and resentment and you always keep it in, eventually it's going to explode and turn into something bad. Well, that is a serious issue. That one has to know that there have to be times and places in which you can let it out. Sometimes the letting it out might be to a therapist or to a rav or to a spouse, although you have to be careful about the laws of Lashon Hara. Of course, if it's the spouse that's the target, that's a separate issue. But sometimes it may involve writing in a diary, which you then throw away, or writing letters, just to let things out. And the Ramban also writes that if you have a taina that someone has done something wrong to you, it is proper for you, it's a mitzvah for you, not to keep it inside and to tell them about it so that they could do tshuva and make amends. But that's not the same as exploding and yelling and screaming. But it is true. And if you're telling me, does the Torah acknowledge that you shouldn't always keep negative feelings to yourself? I would agree with you. There are times in which those feelings need to be explored, but they can be done so in a way that is not a contradiction to the notion of trying to emulate Hashem's midas.
I don't know if people are with regard to the word redemption in the sentences out of the Mishnah, and being saved in the
I was not using them as different terms. I think because Kriyas Yom Tov is normally considered to be the completion of the Geula of Pesach. That's why it's in Pesach. It's not a separate Yom Tov. So now, here's what the Beis Halevi says: when you have a sense that every single second of your life depends on Hashem making a new decision, on one level, that's very, very scary. Because imagine the analogy. The analogy would be somebody would be holding you over a window. Someone's holding you for whatever reason. Either it's a game or whatever. And you're suspended over a 10 stories from the ground. And you know that any time that person can let go, that's it. You're totally dependent. You're totally vulnerable. You're totally in that person's control. It's a very, very scary thing. What if the person slips? What if the person coughs? What if the person sneezes? I have no control over my fate. Every second, I need the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give me life. There's not even like a gravity thing that says, well, if I live, so I'll live. Every second, Hashem makes a new decision. However, the initial response might be a certain amount of anxiety and fear. But as you think about it further, you realize, well, listen, if I look at Hashem as I look at somebody, a person holding me over a 10-story fall, then it's frightening. But HaKadosh Baruch is HaKadosh Baruch. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not only a kol yachal, not only infinite in power, but infinite in his love and his care. And therefore, ironically, you then come to the opposite conclusion, that knowing that your life is totally in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person much reassurance, Gamzula Tova, that Hashem will never allow anything to happen to me that is not for my ultimate good. Now, it may not be what I want, and it may not be something I'll understand, because unfair suffering in the world, etc. But I do know that it doesn't just happen, that it's b'hashgacha, that there was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision, and what happens, therefore, is good in an ultimate sense. So it starts off as a tremendous pachad, in a sense, because the pachad of knowing how vulnerable we are, how dependent we are, how submissive we are, but then it can give a person a tremendous serenity and menuchas hanefesh. Now here's what the Beis Halevi says. The Beis Halevi says, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they didn't yet have a complete sense that every second of their life depends on Hashem's will. They saw Hashem is all-powerful. They saw that Hashem could change nature. They saw that Hashem mastered the universe and could change things at will. But when Hashem wasn't doing that, that didn't necessarily teach them that their every second of existence comes from God. Meaning to say, you could conceive of the world as Hashem made the world and it runs of its own accord like a mechanical clock. And Hashem could change the clock whenever he wants, but when he doesn't change the clock, it's just a clock. That's what you could have thought when you walk away from the Makos. The Makos demonstrate God has a power to change the universe, but it doesn't yet refute the idea that the universe is a self-perpetuating mechanism when Hashem does not intervene to change it. Kriyas Yamsa had a different sensation. Now imagine if you're a Jew walking through the water. Here you really get the sense you're being held over a 10-story drop. The walls of water are on both sides of you. You know that you're alive only because Hashem is holding back that water. At any second that Hashem would decide to release his grip, Aviyachal, the water would come by. So that taught the Jewish people not merely that Hashem has the koach to change Teva, but it made them see in a very physical way that every second of their existence only exists because of the Ratzon Hashem. So Kriyas Yamsuf is a lesson in precariousness, in vulnerability, in dependency. Not in, in dependency, in being dependent. Which taught us a new level of emuna and yira, that it's not just the emuna that I believe Hashem could change nature, but it was the emuna that every moment of my life is only because it's the Ratzon Hashem. Now you might say, maybe that's not a proof. It's not a proof. I mean, there that was the case because they're walking between the water. How does that prove that that's the way it is now? How does Kriyas Yamsuf prove that that's the way it is now? Maybe Hashem created a world that goes on by itself until he decides to intervene. So we have to answer, Kriyas Yamsuf is not a logical proof to this. Meaning the Jewish people understood this intellectually. But emotionally, they didn't feel it. Just like we don't feel that every second Hashem is giving me new life. The experience of seeing Hashem giving them that life as they're walking through the Yamsuf emotionally made them recognize at a deeper level what they already understood cognitively. So you're correct. If you had a person who did not understand this cognitively, Kriyas Yamsuf wouldn't have proven it to him. But if you're talking about the head knows something, but the heart doesn't feel it, this made them feel it. So this is what the Beis Halevi says in his in Parshas Bereishis, that Kriyas Yamsuf is a lesson in precariousness. And what emuna does it teach me? The emuna that not only is Hashem the creator, and not only is Hashem one who can intervene and change nature, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me life every single second. The notion of continuous. By the way, this is how some of Forshim learn, the Pshat, in fact, the Beis Halevi himself said, in fact, this might be the same word, I'm not sure, because they didn't look it up this year. But this may be, the Beis Halevi says another word, you know, it says, Hashem rested, v'yechal alokim bayom hashvi. Hashem rested on the seventh day from all of his work. So Rashi raises the question, what do you mean he rested on Shabbos? I'm sorry, not rested, it says he completed his work on Shabbos. V'yechal alokim. What do you mean he finished his work on Shabbos? He finished his work on Friday. He didn't do any work on Shabbos. So Rashi gives two explanations. One pshat is that a baser v'dam, since we're never sure about the right time, we have to stop working a little before sunset. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could go up to the limit. So from our perspective, Hashem did his work on Shabbos, although it wasn't Shabbos yet, because Hashem went into later than we would go. But Rashi says the other thing. Hashem did work on Shabbos. What did Hashem create on Shabbos? Hashem created menucha. Hashem created rest. He created rest on Shabbos. So the Beis Levi asks a very simple kasha. What does it mean to create rest? Rest is not working. What was the creation that is called rest. So the Beis Halevi says along these lines that there's two types of ways Hashem creates. Hashem creates by making new things, but Hashem creates by recreating old things. Meaning, we are being recreated. So what it means is the following. There was work that Hashem did on Shabbos, but the work was not in being bore new, but in being bore and recreating old. Meaning, the maintenance of creation is creation. Shabbos is the creation of maintenance. That's also the other, because that's creation as well. Hamachadesh b'tshuva b'chal yom tamid maaseh b'reishis. Although b'chayra, I think there's still a little bit of a kasha you could ask in this, and that is, the creation of maintenance was not created only on Shabbos, because every single day, if Hashem on Wednesday preserved what He created on Tuesday, that's also a creation of maintenance, although it's connected with the creation of new things. Okay. But that's the Beis Halevi's first answer, that what is the chiddush of Emunah by Kriyas Yamsuf? It is a sense of our vulnerability, our precariousness, the fact that Hashem gives us life every single second. But then the Beis Halevi in Parshas B'Shalach gives another answer. That is, he points out that if you examine the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf and you compare it to the miracle of the Makos, you see an absolutely opposite pattern. Let's take every Makkah, the Makkah of blood. What was the miracle, what was the Shinoi HaTeva, that the water turned into blood? In other words, the Shinoi HaTeva, the miracle, was in the direction of punishment. It was the bad thing, the bad part of it, that was the miracle. The blood, the Tzavardeya, the Kinim, the Orav, whatever the plague was, the miracle was in the direction of punishing the Egyptians. And the Jewish people that were saved were not saved miraculously. They were saved by simply remaining under the pre-existing natural order. Meaning to say, the miracle of Dam was not that the Jewish people had water, because that is normal life. The miracle of Dam was the Egyptian water turned into blood. Meaning, the nes in every Makkah was the onesh. The Hatzalah in every Makkah, the Hatzalah meaning the saving in every Makkah, was Teva. The Shinoi HaTeva was not in the direction of Hatzalah. The Shinoi HaTeva was in the direction of Nesia. Well, it's different in this way. It's different simply because it is true that once there is a gezeirah, being saved from the gezeirah is a miracle as well. But it only becomes a miracle that you're saved because there's a gezeirah miraculously that some b'chorim will die. Meaning to say, the natural order of the way the world normally operated would be that nobody would die. So in effect, when the Jewish firstborn survived, Hashem let them, granted that was a miracle too, but Hashem let them remain under the pre-existing teva that exists in the world. Oh, you're going back to the early thing the Beis Halevi said. Not necessarily, because like this, all that shows me is that Hashem can protect me, Hashem can not let things happen to me, but that still doesn't mean Hashem gives me life every second. You see, there's a difference between saying Hashem has mercy on me and doesn't punish me, and saying Hashem is giving me life.
Just because of the essence of the Dam on the Duan, Hashem
Yeah. Skips
over those houses.
Well, but all that means is Hashem in His rachamim did not kill me. And that's even a human situation. I might say this human being did not kill me. But that's not the same thing as he gave me life. See, there's a difference. Although in speech we often say that if somebody could have killed me and didn't, we might say that person gave me life. But that's not quite accurate. He's not giving me the life force. He's simply not taking it away from me. Lakas Bechoros alone illustrates Hashem did not take away our lives.
Yep. Hashem gave them because otherwise they would die.
Well, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the pasuk says, Lo yitein hamashchis lava. Hashem did not allow the malach hamavis to come in. That doesn't mean, in other words, again, that's even understood as like a human being. If I guard the door so the murderer doesn't come in, I saved your life, but I didn't give you your life. See? Okay. Now, the thing is this. If you look at Kriyas Yamsuf, look at it exactly the opposite way. What is the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf? The splitting of the ocean and the ability of the Jews to walk through. The death of the Egyptians, at least the Pshuto Shel Mikra, was not a miracle. The death of the Egyptians is simply going back to the normal nature of the water to collapse. So the Beis Levi points out, in all of the ten Makos, the Shinoi HaTeva was in the direction of punishment and retribution, and the sparing of the Jews was leaving them to the natural order. Kriyas Yamsuf, it's exactly the opposite. The Shinoi HaTeva was for the saving of the Jews. And it was the Egyptians that were punished, not through a miracle. Now granted, there are midrashim that build in miracles here, but in terms of the basic thing, the Egyptians died because when you walk into the water, you're going to die. Right? They didn't benefit from the miracle. So the Beis Levi says, this is what Kriyas Yamsuf taught. Because when we left Mitzrayim, we had a very strong sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes evil, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys Rishoyim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will eventually catch up with those people that are over on his Ratzon and will destroy them. But Kriyas Yamsuf taught us that Hashem does not only do miracles to punish the bad people, but it shows us HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tremendous love for the Jewish people. Because the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf was not a miracle of punishment and destruction. It was a miracle of benevolence, compassion, and love. And therefore the Kriyas Yamsuf, says the Beis Halevi, taught us the lesson, not only that God is awesome and powerful and will punish the evildoers, but it taught us the lesson of Hashem's special love for the Jewish people, that He changes the laws of Shemayim and Oretz to bring them Geula, to bring them redemption. Now, the Pasuk says in Mishle, famous Pasuk, Kimayim haponim el ponim, like water reflects the face that you show the water. You look into the water, the face that reflects back is your face. Kain leiv ha'adam va'adam, so is the heart of a person. Basically, as the Vilna Gaon explains, what we show forth to one person is what that person gives back to us. If we relate to a person with love and care, they will feel in their heart love and care for us. They will reflect back what we reflect towards them. Right? If we reflect towards them anger and resentment and jealousy, that's how they'll feel towards us. In fact, there's a maysa, B'Chaim V'Lezhner. It's just a strange, scary maysa in many ways, that he had once a major, he was a head of a beis din, and there was a major din Torah by a butcher, and he had paskin that this butcher, his animals were treif, and the butcher lost a lot of money. So the butcher swore he would take revenge on Rav Chaim V'Lezhner. So on a pretext of asking Rav Chaim V'Lezhner a shayla somewhere, he had to take him out to a desolate area, and I have to ask you a shayla. And when they're in the middle of the forest, he takes out a big knife and says, now I'm going to show you not to mess with me. He was going to kill Rav Chaim V'Lezhner. And Rav Chaim V'Lezhner just looked at him for a few minutes, for a few seconds, and the person put down the knife and went on his knees and started crying and begged his forgiveness. So the story, I don't know how the story got known, but the way the story was explained, the way Rav Chaim Volozhin explained the story was the following. The person at that moment hated me. The person hated me so much, he wanted to kill me. So I concentrated with all of my kavana to try to feel love for this person, to try to look at it from his vantage point, to try to even say, the Sifrei Musar even say, imagine the person as a child, right? Sometimes, you know, an obnoxious adult. Imagine him as a cute, freckled child, you know. His mother must have liked him, you know, whatever it is. And the moment that I was Zocha to feel Ava towards him, it became Kamayim Haponim El Panim. I knew that he would feel Ava towards me, even though it was uncommunicated. An amazing thing. And in that way, all of his hatred and all of his animosity melted away. That's a practical schooler for people to be aware of, right? If somebody doesn't like you, try to work on liking them, and Kabayim Aponim Aponim says that they'll like you. Okay, so like this.
Well, I don't know if it always works.
Well, maybe you didn't try hard enough.
I don't know if it always works. People, okay. Well, a lot of people try to be nice, another person is disgusting, but they're not going to change their...
Well, you know what they say, you know, the story about the husband that was mean to his wife, you know, for 20 years, and the therapist said, you know, bring her flowers, you know. He brought her flowers one Friday and came back Sunday and said, Monday, doctor, it didn't work. I brought her flowers once, you know. Sometimes it's not just doing something once. One has to, you know, have a lot of patience, and but eventually it's supposed to work, you know. That's what we should at least try it. What do you lose by, you know, trying to care for somebody? It never goes to waste. No, but it never goes to waste. The thing is that you have to understand that you know, after Mei Aviyas from Shana, we go to Shemayim, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu will ask, you know, why did we allow Machlokas and Sinah to fester? At least you could say, you know, I tried to do what I could. Did you have an answer? So even if it doesn't seem to work, at least one has a tshuva to the Ribono Shel Olam that I tried my part. If we didn't try our part, you know, it's going to be a serious taina. Why didn't we do what we could do, you know, for it? So, here's the thing. Kriyas Yamsuf taught us the strength of Hashem's love. But here's the thing. Kamayim Aponim Aponim. When Bnei Yisrael experienced the magnitude of Hashem's love, that caused them to feel a love for Hashem. Because the same way, the face that one human shows another human makes me reflect it back. Kal v'chomer, the face that Hashem shows me is what I feel towards Hashem. Experiencing love of Hashem, in other words, experiencing Hashem's love for us, makes us feel a tremendous love for Hashem. And the Beis Levi therefore says that the chiddush of Kriyas Yamsuf was Bnei Yisrael felt in a more powerful way than the Matos the love Hashem had for them, which in turn meant they felt a tremendous love for Hashem. But now there's one more question. But wait a second here. When the Pasuk describes what they experienced, it doesn't say they loved Hashem. Vayiru ha'ames Hashem, they feared Hashem. Yira, it doesn't say Ava, it says Yira. So here the Beis Halevi points out a beautiful point. You know, we talk about Yira, fear of Hashem, and love of Hashem. And I know that you know that there are two levels of Yira. There's the lower Yira, which is simply fear of punishment. I don't want to do a sin, because Hashem will punish me. And that's a high Madrega, but we put it down. That's a very high Madrega, but it's not the highest Madrega. There's a higher level of Yira, which is not called Yiras HaOnesh, but it's called Yiras HaRaimimus. That's a sense of awe, reverence, respect. Right? Even in human life, you know, why do people behave, you know, respectfully in front of a president or in front of the Queen of England? They're not afraid the president is going to throw them in jail, or, you know, the Queen of England is going to cut off their head. It used to be that could have been the case. That's not going to happen today. But there's a certain amount of reverence you have for the office. Right? That's Yiras HaRaimimus. Above all that is serving Hashem out of love. Ava. But then, there is something even above Ava. And that goes back to Yira again. So there's Yiras HaOnesh, Yiras HaRomamos, Avas Hashem. And then there's a level of Yira that comes after Avas Hashem. And that level of Yira is the following. When your love is so intense that you are afraid to do anything wrong because it'll bring pain to the one that you love. That's what it means by Yiras Chet. Yiras Shamayim, right, we say on Rosh Chodesh benching, we should have a month of Yiras Shamayim for Yiras Chet. Yiras Shamayim is reverence, Yiras Aromamus. Yiras Chet means I am afraid to do something wrong, not because Hashem will punish me, and not even because I have respect for Hashem, but the love for Hashem is so intense in our hearts that I cannot do anything that will cause the Ribono Shel Olam tsar. Right? Again, you can analogize this to human love as well, that you're afraid to do anything because it hurts you so much to cause that entity pain that you can't do it. So the Beis Halevi says, when it says Bnei Yisrael were Masig Yira, Hashem's love for them. And the Beis Halevi says it's tremendously meduyik. That's why it says Vayiru Ames Hashem. Hashem is Yudke Vavke. Now normally when it talks about Yira, it says Yirat Elokim. Elokim is the Midah Sadin. Hashem is the Midah of Rachamim. So what do you mean they had Yira because of the Midah Sarachamim? Exactly so. The Midas HaRachamim is the feeling of Hashem's love. They felt Hashem's love, so they felt love for Hashem. That love that came from experiencing Rachamim gave them Yiras Chet. Right, that's the Chiddush. Now with all of this, I think we can now see in a much deeper level why our concern for human life, our first question, all of a sudden is created on the seventh day of Pesach, and we didn't worry about it the first day of Pesach. Because the answer is this. Part of loving somebody, this is true in human relationships, is you now acquire the ability, love is a connection of the hearts, you acquire the ability to see the world from their perspective. You make yourself part of their world. You give yourself the ability to see the world through their eyes.
What does that mean exactly? I don't understand what that exactly means.
Well, what that means is that...
Do you listen?
No. It's not a question of obedience. It's a question of that you know their feelings. You know what their thoughts are. You know how they look at things. And you understand that. It's not foreign to you. In fact, they tell a famous Hasidic story, I think Rav Moshe Leib Sassover, said he once learned what Avas Yisrael is by watching two Russian drunks in a bar. And one drunk said to the other drunk, "Do you love me?" And the other drunk said, "Sure, I love you." So he says, "So tell me what I'm thinking right now. Tell me what hurts me." And the person says, "I don't know what hurts you." He says, "How can you say you love me if you don't know what hurts me?" Loving somebody means you're connected so that you see things from their perspective. You don't just see things from your vantage point. You also see it from their perspective. So it turns out the following. Kriyas Yamsuf is when we were zochet to Avas Hashem, loving Hashem. Loving Hashem means you see the world in some way the way Hashem sees the world. Now, as a human being, if the Egyptians are trying to kill me and they get killed, I'm going to be happy. Because my enemies have been destroyed. But when you see the world and the universe from Hashem's vantage point, and Hashem is the creator of life, not only of the Jews, but Hashem is the creator of life of the Egyptians as well, then from Hashem's vantage point, there is a certain amount of sadness. But until you love Hashem, you're not going to feel Hashem's sadness because you haven't connected yourself to see the world from His vantage point. And consequently, if the big chiddush of Shvi Shel Pesach is feeling Hashem's love, which in turn makes us feel love for Hashem, and if feeling that love for Hashem enables us to see the world from Hashem's viewpoint, at that point, we can feel the sadness for the loss of life. The first day of Pesach, we're not yet there. The first day of Pesach, we have Yiras Hashem. But the Avas Hashem is not yet as clarified. And therefore, we don't yet see, we don't enter into Hashem's perspective of the world. And that's why the Maaseh Yadai is intimately connected with love of Hashem. To put it another way, to put it in a simpler way, in a sense, when you love Hashem, you also feel love to all of Hashem's children. That might be a simpler way of putting it. Right? You can't love a parent and hate the children. And therefore, the day that you have Ava Hashem is the day that you also have Ava for even the human beings who try to destroy you. And that is why Kriyas Yamsuf is specifically that which is Mechadesh, the emotion in us, that if it's Maaseh Yadai Tovu B'Yom, we don't say Shira. The first day of Pesach, we hadn't yet achieved that particular level. And this really explains Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is, of course, read on Pesach. Many people read it to Seder, although it's a little difficult based on what we're saying, but it is read either Shabbos Chol HaMoed, or it's read the seventh day of Pesach. And, you know, Shir HaShirim, as you know, is the story, it's a mashal, but it's written as the story of a princess who is seeking to be reunited with the person that she loves, and when he's ready to be with her, she's not ready, and when she's ready, he's not ready, and they never really get together, and each of them yearns and pines for the other. And we know that Rabbi Akiva taught that if all the shirim in Tanakh are Kodesh, Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kedoshim, because it is not just a romantic story of a woman and a man, but it is a mashal for the love that Hashem has for the Jewish people. Hashem is the chasan, and the Jewish people are the kala. And Rashi goes through, pasuk by pasuk, I don't know if maybe you've learned Shir HaShirim, in which, when it talks about Hashem is knocking, and the woman, or the person is knocking, and the woman says, I'm not ready, I'm in bed, that refers to Hashem trying to bring Mashiach, and we're not ready. And then when she's ready, meaning we're ready, Hashem says it's not the time, all of these tragic events. And it's the passion and the yearning. And if you look at the Art Scroll translation of Shir HaShirim, you will notice that they do not even translate it literally. They have a note that they were advised that because people might misunderstand this as a romantic story, as Chas V'Shalom, secular people say, oh, it's just love poetry. So in order to avoid the misunderstanding, they only give the Midrashic translation. So when it says, the man knocked at the door and the woman was in bed and said, I'm not coming out, it says, when Hashem is ready, you know, bring Mashiach, we're not ready. In other words, it takes out the references to the man-woman relationship. So here is the question. Shlomo HaMelech is said to be the Chacham Mikol Adam, the wisest of all people. Now, Shlomo HaMelech didn't follow the recommendation of the Art Scroll editors. He wrote it about a man and a woman. He wrote about sexual imagery. He wrote about the desire to be united intimately.
And he didn't just say, Bnei Yisrael had Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. He used the mashal of intimacy, something that is so easily misunderstood as physical passion. Why did Shlomo HaMelech write Shir HaShirim to describe the love of a man and a woman? Why didn't he just write it in terms of what it is, the love of Bnei Yisrael and Hashem? So Rav Gifter says a very important mussar that emerges from this, and that is, yes, Shir HaShirim is a mashal. It's a mashal, it's a parable for a higher emes, and the higher emes is the love of Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. That's called the nimshal. There's a mashal and a nimshal. But he says, you can't understand the nimshal until you understand the mashal. What is that saying? A person cannot love Hashem until he first understands the ability to love and care about another human being. Until you're margish, now I don't mean necessarily in marriage, although that's what it's talking about there, but until one has the ability to have avas Yisrael to another human being, you can't love Hashem. And therefore, you want to love Hashem, the highest madrega? Then you have to learn that passion and that intimacy for another person. And that's a very big yisod, because sometimes people say, well, I love Hashem, but you know, a lot of people I don't get along with, etc., I don't like them too much. Shir HaShirim teaches us that you have to start off with the love of another human being, and from there you come to love of Hashem. And Leo Tolstoy, the famous Russian novelist, of War and Peace, so he was a count, he was a member of the Russian nobility before the Russian Revolution. And he was a social reformer. He wrote books about the equality of man and everything. So somebody once asked him why he mistreated his serfs, his slaves. So his response was, I'm a lover of humanity. It doesn't mean I have to care about people. And the concept is that sometimes we are perfectly happy with abstractions, general ideas, but we can't translate them into the everyday small activity. Shir HaShirim says you got to go the opposite way around. If you want to reach the high level of love of Hashem, you start from the smaller level of loving Hashem's children. And in a sense, this is connected to Kriyas Yamsuf, because love of Hashem has to translate into loving even the Egyptians on some level, or feeling sad that they were destroyed. Ma'isa Yadai Tavu B'yam. Because if you really love Hashem, you see the world from Hashem's viewpoint. And Hashem, as the creator, feels care for everybody. Because remember, and this connects the first answer to the Beis Levi as well, because if Hashem is giving life every single second through his kindness, then he was giving life to the Egyptians every single second as well. Now, this is a complicated idea, because obviously we're supposed to hate evil. You know, people can say, well, Hitler, we're supposed to love Hitler, what's going on? Obviously, you know, you hate and despise rishis and evil. But on another level, I mean, the Baal HaTanya writes, it's a complicated thing, he says there's simultaneous love and hate. But we have to believe that within every human being, even within Amalek, because remember, even Amalek that we're commanded to destroy, the Rambam writes, if an Amaleki does a sincere tshuva, we are mekabel them. In fact, Chazal even say that Haman's own great-great-grandchildren, Haman, they survived and they became teachers of Torah. So, when evil is destroyed, we are relieved, but we are also saddened, because there was a potential for holiness that was not realized, that could have been there. And therefore, that's the lesson. We don't glorify in anyone's destruction. We are happy that the rishus is gone, but we are saddened that the potential for goodness was not realized. What a waste, what a tragedy. And if you remember the book of Yonah, it's really the same thing as the book of Yonah. when Hashem, you know, tells Yonah, go to Nineveh and I'll destroy that whole city. And Yonah didn't want to go. Why? Because he figured, Hashem, I know you're going to call it off at the last minute anyway, and I'm going to look like a fool. And of course he goes and Nineveh does tshuva, and the city gets spared, and Yonah's very upset. Because as I told you this was going to happen, why did you put me through this? And if you remember, you know, it's a very hot day, and there's a plant that's giving him shade, and then the wind destroys the plant, and it's a chamsin, and he's very, very hot, he wants to die. I mean, obviously there's a lot to talk about, but Hashem says, you feel so much concern about this little plant, and you think I don't care about the hundreds of thousands of people that live in Nineveh, and you just wipe them out? You think they don't matter to me? You think they don't count for anything? And basically, this was also Yonah's understanding, that to see it from Hashem's perspective, every person counts. Every person, oh good, of course there are distinctions between Goyim and Jews. Of course Jews have more Kedusha and more Torah. But everything in Hashem's world has a purpose and there's a need for that, and a tachlis. And therefore, from Hashem's perspective, nothing should go to waste. Right? But when are you able to see things that way? When you have Avas Hashem. Yiras Hashem will not give that to you. Yiras Hashem, you'll be obedient and you'll listen. But you're not going to see the world from a Kodesh Baruch Hu's perspective. Right? So that's the idea of Kriyas Yamsuf. Now, this is very important during this period of Sfiras HaOmer, because we know that Sfiras HaOmer was originally a very happy time. I mean, after all, it should be a happy time. We're counting towards Matan Torah, the Gevaldik Simcha of Matan Torah. And yet we know that in later generations, Sfiras HaOmer became a time of avelus and mourning. That's why we don't have haircuts or go to weddings or make weddings, except on Lag BaOmer, etc. And people have different minhagim. It's not the whole sphere. It's 33 days during the Omer period. Some start from now to Lag BaOmer. Others start from Rosh Chodesh till Erev, 3 days before Shavuos. Others start after Rosh Chodesh till Erev Shavuos. Some do go 49 days. There are different minhagim about this. By the way, I should tell you an important halacha, a very useful halacha for you to know. People, you know, let's assume, for example, that you do Svira from second day of Pesach to Lag BaOmer, and you're invited to a chasna right after Pesach. So are you allowed to go to that chasna, since for you it's avelus? Or let's say you keep Svira from Rosh Chodesh to 3 days before Shavuos, and you're invited to a wedding after Lag BaOmer. On Lag BaOmer there's no problem. Can you go? So Rav Moshe has a very important tshuva. This is important for people to know. Rav Moshe says, there is no iser during Svira to go to a wedding. The iser during Svira is to get married. Meaning to say, as long as the chasan and the kala are getting married when it's not the avelus period for them, you are allowed to go. Right? There's no issue. In other words, I don't have to change my minhag. In other words, people say, well, can I change my minhag? That's the wrong question. You don't have to change anything. You are allowed to go during your mourning period, during a wedding, as long as the chasan and the kala are doing it, not during their mourning. Now, of course, if they're not religious and they're violating the sphere of laws, then you shouldn't go either. But if they're doing it when they're allowed to do it, and in that sense, I should say that the minhagim of the wife will follow those of the husband, that would normally be the way you do it, then you can go as a guest. And it's brought down for men, they could even shave to go to the wedding, etc. And listening to music is not a problem because they're coming to Mimusameh, Chasim, Vakala. In fact, even Sheva Brachas during Sfira are permitted. You can even go to a Sheva Brachas that has music afterwards. Okay, but be it as it may, why is the Sfira Saimer a sad period? Why is it a time of Avelis? So you know, the Gemara says in Yevamos, because Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students who died during this period, and we mourn the loss of all of that Torah. I mean, imagine this. These were the Talmidim that it took Rabbi Akiva 24 years, and his whole life's work was just destroyed like this. And they died, the Gemara says, because they did not show proper kavod for each other. They did not show each other proper respect. Now here you have to understand what we mean by the term kavod. Kavod does not mean etiquette, standing up when you come into the room or opening the door for you. That's not it. We can assume that Rabbi Akiva's students were not pushing each other in line and calling each other names. That was not what they were doing. But Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says the concept of kavod, kavod comes from the word heavy, kavet. When someone is bekavod, that means they are significant, they are weighty, they have a value, there is something in them that is worthwhile. Looking at another person with kavod is not external politeness, but it's seeing that in them there is something worthy of respect. They're weighty. The English word that we use, actually it's a Latin word, is gravitas. There's a certain sense of substance. And that's really our avoda during Sfira, to look at each other and see in each other a sense of that chashivas. But of course I should say that there, you must also have a sense of your own kavod, because, you know, what it says, v'yahavtel areicha kamocha, love your friend as you love yourself. Well, if you hate yourself, it's not going to help your friend too much, right? So part of this is there has to be a kamocha as well, to see a kavod within oneself. And it's very interesting. Kavod and love are very much connected. Why I'm moving from kavod to love? Because the point is that truly loving a person is when you see in them qualities that are worthy of respect and admiration. If you see nothing in a person to admire, the only love that could possibly exist would be, you know, physical gratification. There couldn't be. What is there to love? You know, if you see nothing in that person that's worthy of admiration, then what is there that you can possibly love? So love comes from that kavod. Without that kavod, there cannot be that love. And it's very interesting that why did Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva taught, indeed, the v'yahavtel areicha kamocha is the most important pasuk in the Torah. So, if you remember Rabbi Akiva's story, Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd. He was an Am Haaretz. He was ignorant. And the daughter of his boss wanted to marry him. And she sent him off to learn, Rachel. And after 24 years, after 12 years, he was going to come home. And he heard her say, you can go back for another 12 years. And he went back another 12 years. And he came back with 24,000 students, all of whom died during the Yomer period later. And when she came to see him, he said, Shali v'shalochem, my Torah and your Torah are all because of her. What happened here? Rabbi Akiva was an Am Haaretz. Not only was Rabbi Akiva ignorant, at the age of 40 still, Rabbi Akiva hated Talmidei Chachamim. He was jealous of them. He thought they looked down upon him. Maybe they did. He said, in my Am Haaretz days, I would bite the Talmud Chacham and break his bones if I could. But what was it? She had seen something in him, a quality, which she was not even aware that he had. And she brought it out. And she gave him the strength to be able to do this. So you see, Rabbi Akiva in effect is saying, from his own life, the kavod, kavod again, not honor, respect, but the kavod, she saw in him something worthy and good, and that enabled him to actualize what he became. And that's the way it is, you know. You can have children, and if the children do not get the message that they have something that is good within them, then it's not going to come out very often. Okay, the message of a parent, the message of a husband and a wife, a Rebbe, or a teacher to students, to give a sense of that kavod, how much a person needs that kavod. And you know, it's a funny thing with kavod. You know, we say, on one hand, kavod, we say, well, you know, don't be a balgaiva and everything else, which of course. On the other hand, if a person doesn't have that sense of a cheshivas, how are you going to accomplish anything? I saw this story from the Vilna Gaon. It's an amazing story how everyone needs that sense of kavod, that sense that they matter. It's an amazing story. There was a tzaddik in Vilna who used to fast the entire week. He was such a tzaddik, he would only eat a little bread on Shabbos. And everybody was amazed at how could the person be, you know, how could a person live this way? What a kadosh he must have been. So they were telling the Vilna Gaon about it, and the Vilna Gaon said, well, when he goes home on Friday, how does it work? So he says, well, when he comes home out of the forest on Friday, all the children of the town just gathered together to watch him and gaze at him because he's such a tzaddik. So the Vilna Gaon said, next Friday, I don't know why the Vilna Gaon wanted to disprove something, but he wanted to prove it. He says, next Friday, let's not have the kids there and see what happens. The kids shouldn't be watching him when he comes back to town. He came back to town, he immediately fainted. He had to be taken to a hospital. He couldn't survive. Now, what's the pshat? This person was a real tzaddik. We're not saying chas v'shalom, he was a hypocrite. But it's even a tzaddik gets a chizuk from the fact that there are people that are machshuvim. A person needs that. And when that chashivas was taken away, you know, he couldn't, even the tzaddik couldn't go on. You know, it's a big musr, but this is, I saw Rav Yeruchim Lvovitz, that's all the Mashgiach of Mir, said this as a very interesting point. He was making a point. That is why the people who learn without so much hatzlacha are so beloved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they don't get that measure of kavod that these success stories get. Those are the pillar. Because the success stories that have admiration and people, you know, admiring them, that gives them a chizuk to go on. But the person who doesn't get that, it's harder. You don't get that encouragement. But you still go on and you still try. How treasured does Hashem take that? Because the kavod is such an important element, and you don't have it, the avoda becomes even more beloved. I mean, that's a very, very graphic way of looking at why Hashem is machshiv the effort so much. Because you don't always get the kavod that comes along with that. In fact, he was saying, Rav Yeruchim even said, I mean, I wouldn't have said it because it almost sounds a little disrespectful, but Rav Yeruchim said the following, you know, this guy had the admiration, not to say, this tzaddik had the admiration of children, and that was enough to keep him going. Consider Rabbi Kiva Eicher, who had the admiration of the greatest gedolim of the generation. Imagine how that's going to allow him to keep going. If even the admiration of the children could give a person the ability to do superhuman accomplishments, then in a sense, the kavod that one gets can give a person even more. And this is in spite of the fact that Rav Kiva Eicher was known as the greatest anovim of the generation. But Rav Yeruchim said how hard it is for someone that doesn't have any of them, and yet they go ahead and they try, how much Hashem treasures that avod. This is what Rav Yeruchim says. And again, it's something to think about. Okay, so I will stop here. I wish you a good good week and a good Shabbos, and we'll see you next week.